Welcome to installment 259 of Sefer Mitzvahs from the Rambam. Today's portion contains three commandments, once again relating to various categories of murderers. Positive commandment number 225 is the commandment that someone that murders unintentionally should be sent into exile in one of the cities of refuge, the Orei Miklat. Prohibition number 295, or as some versions of the Rambam have it, 296, is the prohibition not to take payment or ransom in order that a person that is required to go into exile in one of these cities as a result of an unintentional murder should rather pay off money, and you will accept money and not send him to one of these cities. And finally, prohibition number 292 is the prohibition not to execute a person, even if he is, according to law, required of being executed if the court has not yet passed its judgment. Positive Commandment 225 deals with the Orei Miklat, the cities of refuge, as Rambam quotes the Parsha in the book of Numbers, chapter 35, verse 25, referring to someone who murdered another one unintentionally, b'shegeg. The verse says, v'yashav sham, that he should dwell there, meaning in one of these cities of refuge, ad meis ha-kain ha-godl, until the death of the kain godl, the high priest. There were six cities which were set aside to be cities of refuge. Six of them on the east side of the Jordan River, and another three on the east side of the Jordan River, and another three in the land of Israel itself. In addition, there were another 42 cities which belonged to the Levites, the Levitical cities. And these also basically had a din of one of the Orei Miklat. Altogether, then, there were 48 of these cities. Another three will be added, Kishayarchiv Avayas Gvulcha, when Hashem gives us additional lands in the days of Mashiach. There will be a total of 9 regular cities of refuge, together with the 42 Levitical cities. The law was that a person who murdered unintentionally would go into exile into one of these cities and have to reside there for the rest of his life, or until the death of the Kohen Gadol. As the Sifri says, the Yoshav Shom, the word Shom is mentioned 3 times. You should dwell there. Why does the Chumash mention it 3 times? That a person says, should realize that Shom Tehei Dirasei, this should be your dwelling place, this should be the place where you die, and this will be the place where you are buried. This is, of course, only until the death of the Kohen Gadol, upon whose death he would be released. It was a common occurrence for murderers, therefore, to pray constantly for the Kohen Gadol to die. Because if the Kohen Gadol would die, they would be set free. The Gemara therefore tells us that the mother of the Kohen Gadol customarily provided food and clothing for the murderer, hoping that the murderer would have a sense of compassion, a sense of obligation towards the Kohen Gadol, since his mother, the Kohen Gadol's mother, was providing for him. He would then not pray for the Kohen Gadol to die. Therefore, in giving the murderer food, the mother would save her son's life. The cities of refuge accomplished 2 purposes. One of them is that it was atonement for the unintentional murder that was committed. As the Torah tells us that even something done unintentionally would not have happened if the person had behaved totally correctly. And therefore, even an unintentional sin still needs some sort of atonement. How is this atonement? The Chinuch explains that by going to a city of exile, where a person is surrounded by a strange environment, away from his friends and family, such a person has been uprooted from his previous way of life and is considered like a kind of death penalty. Therefore, when he is sent to the city, he is being atoned for, since he is undergoing the same punishment, undergoing the same effect which he himself was subjected someone else to. Since he committed murder, then he is in a sense murdered as well. Nevertheless, the Torah tells us that he still is allowed to live there. And the Rambam explains that since he is entitled to live, a student is allowed to bring his Rebbe, his teacher, with him. That without learning words of Torah from his teacher, he also feels no life. And so too, a teacher without teaching also feels no life. Therefore, a teacher who unintentionally committed a murder goes to the city of refuge with his entire yeshiva, with the entire school. Because the students also should not be deprived of their life, meaning their ability to study Torah, because of this unintentional murder. This, however, was only one function of the city of refuge. Another was Shemitah, that it protected the murderer until a later period of time. When the family of the murdered person want to take revenge, the murderer is allowed to run to the city of refuge, in which case it helps not only for an unintentional murderer, but even for someone who committed the murder b'mezid, intentionally. He also can go to such a city for protection until he is brought to the Beis Din and judged properly. For this reason, the Jewish courts were required to take care and ensure that there would be easy access to the city of refuge. The roads were made extremely wide to the city of refuge. And once a year, on the 15th of Adar, the day after Purim, they were required to send out people and inspect all of the roads leading to the city of refuge. In case one of the roads would be not smooth or be otherwise obstructed, then this could perhaps lead to a death. And the Beis Din is considered responsible for this death. If the murderer, the unintentional murderer, was caught by a vengeful family member and thereupon murdered, the court would be responsible since they did not create an easy means of access for the murderer to escape. In addition, at every road junction, signs had to be placed, clearly guiding the person who's running, saying, Miklat, Miklat, this is the city of refuge, and pointing to the direction, so there should be no delay whatsoever. All of these laws are explained in the Talmudic tractate Makis. However, there is an important lesson for us in all of this. As the Lubavitcher Rebbe Shlita once explained, that we ourselves are required to be those signs, that we have to stand on the junction, that as other Jews around us have unintentionally committed murder, so to speak, against their own neshama, unknowingly sinning because of lack of knowledge, and they are looking for the way back to the Torah, and the way back to come close to Hashem, we must be the ones standing on the road, and we must guide them to the proper way, and we must be the signs yelling out, Miklat, Miklat, this is where you can be saved, this is where you can achieve your atonement. And even though it requires standing out in the middle of a road, and a person might think, who knows when I'm going to be needed, and who knows if anyone's even going to look at me, nevertheless, the sign is there in order to save a life. And as the story is told of the Baal Shem Tov, that he explained that a neshama, a Jewish soul, comes down to the world for 60, 70 years approximately, and that this entire lifespan could have been only to do one Jew one favor, whether a physical favor or in particular a spiritual favor, to help that person achieve a greater spiritual elevation. All just one such favor is worth the entire descent of the soul down here to this world. And how does the person find their atonement? In the Ar Miklat. That Miklat literally means to absorb. That the city absorbs, so to speak, the person, and therefore protects them from being hurt by any vengeful family members. And so, too, we find that the Torah accomplishes the same thing. It is absorbed into the person. When a person studies the words of Torah, then divrei Torah keltin, that they are absorbed by the person and come a part of him, and thereby the person wishes to have a closer relationship with Hashem and a more of a desire to do his will, and this will affect his kapara, his atonement. And this is one of the explanations of the second commandment of today's portion, Prohibition 295, or as the Kapach version has it, Prohibition 296. As stated in the book of Numbers, chapter 35, verse 32, that the Jewish court is prohibited from taking ransom, a monetary gift, in order to exempt this murderer from running away and having to live in exile in one of the cities. That once the person is determined to have to go into exile, the Beis Din is required to execute this judgment, and he must be sent there. As explained in the Talmudic tractate Makkos, even should the person wish to exempt himself through a large gift, they are prohibited from taking it. And the reason, according to what we explained previously, is clear, that the murderer is being sent to the Ir Miklat is not only a punishment, it is for his own betterment. In order for him to achieve atonement, he is required to go into exile, as all of the, quote, punishments in the Torah are ultimately for the person's own good and own perfection. And even when capital punishment is exercised, this is also the only way, the Torah reveals to us, this is the only way the person's soul can achieve an atonement and thereby merit a share in the world to come. However, when do we know that the person really deserves the death penalty? Only when the Jewish court has made a proper examination and determined that the death penalty is required. And this explains our final commandment, Prohibition 292. The prohibition to execute an individual before the Jewish court has actually given the order. As the Rambam quotes the book of Numbers, chapter 35, verse 12, which states, the Le'yomus HaRatzeach, one may not kill the murderer, ad omde lifnei ha'edel ha'mishpat, before he stands in front of the congregation to be judged, the congregation referring to the Jewish court. Therefore, even if witnesses see a murder being committed and they warn the murderer not to do it, they are prohibited from carrying out the judgment if the murder has been committed. If it's before the murder has been committed, they are entitled to try to stop it, even if it necessitates the killing of the murderer, as we will discuss in the law of Redeif, God willing. However, once the murder has been committed, they are prohibited from executing the punishment. As the Rambam brings from the Mechilta, that how do we know that someone that observed a capital crime, such as murder or adultery, cannot execute the punishment? The Mechilta quotes this verse, Le'yomus haratzeach adomde. One may not murder the murderer, one may not kill him until he stands in judgment. And so too the Mechilta says, let's say an entire group of people, an entire congregation, saw a person being killed. Are they allowed to execute judgment? No, says the Mechilta. Ad omde lifnei ha'edel le'mishpat, until he stands before the congregation, before the Jewish court, he is not allowed to be put to death. As the Rambam explains that even if the Beis Din HaGadol, the greatest court among the Jewish people, all should observe a murder taking place, they nevertheless cannot execute the judgment. Rather, they become witnesses, and they must go before another Jewish court to testify that they witnessed the murder. And then, once the other Jewish court has determined that the murder has been committed, then they can execute the death penalty only after